We're holding on Memphis Umut Bey's, the fifth line of the wide lines. We started talking yesterday about the story of Yoav. We got into that because the Mishnah had, or not the Mishnah, Braisa had talked about that when a person is executed by a Jewish king as murdered by Malchus, then his property is forfeit to the government, as opposed to people who are executed by Beis Din, which has been the subject of this Perek. Their nechassim go to their Yorushim. And the last thing we talked about was we find that Yoav had run to the Mishkan and held on to the corners of the Mizbeach. So we said that if we sit now, and we had the opinion, we had a machlokas, the Chacham of Rabbi and Rabbi Yehuda, where Rabbi Yehuda had said that no, the nechassim of people who were executed by the king also go to their families. So the question was, according to the Chachamim, we understand he didn't want to be executed by the king, therefore he's holding on to the horns of the Mizbeach to try to save himself. At worst, he'll be judged by the Sanhedrin, as Tosfos brings from the Yerushalmi, that holding on to the corners of the Mizbeach represents that he's going to have himself judged by the Sanhedrin. According to Rabbi Yehuda, what's the difference? Either way, his nechassim are going to his. Either way, he's going to be killed, and either way, his nechassim are going to his yoshim. And we said that even according to Rabbi Yehuda, we would say that he wanted chayei shah. He wanted to at least live for a little longer while Benayahu confers with Shlomo about what to do. So to understand this next Amud from here until the end of the Perek, we need to review a little bit various stories involving Yoav and other people that he interacted with. These are various episodes throughout Sefer Shmuel and the beginning of Malachim. So it's like this. There was Yoav, who was a nephew of David, and he was David's general. Then there was Avner, who was a relative of Shaul's, and he was Shaul's general. So you have there were interactions between Avner and David during Shmuel Aleph, when David is on the run from Shaul. We'll talk about those later. In any case, eventually David becomes king over Shevet Yehuda. Avner takes Ishbosheth, one surviving son of Shaul, and makes him king over the other Shvatim. At one point, this is in Shmuel Beis. At one point, there's a battle between David's and Ishbosheth's forces. So Avner is on Shaul's side. On David's side, you have, besides Yoav has two brothers named Asahel and Avishai. So now, during this battle, Asahel, who was an extremely fast runner, is chasing after Avner, apparently with intent to kill him. So Avner warns Asahel several times, back off, otherwise I'm going to have to kill you in self-defense, you're a roidif. Asahel doesn't listen. Eventually, Avner hits him with the back of his sword, with the hilt of his sword, and kills him. So naturally, Yoav, so Yoav, so Avner would take the view that he did it in self-defense. Yoav would take the view that it was unjustified, as we're going to learn in the Gemara. Later on, Avner and Ishbosheth have a falling out. Avner decides, you know what, forget about Ishbosheth, I'm going over to David's side. He comes to David in Hebron to tell him, I'm going to now be on your side, and I'm going to help all the other Shvat. I'm going to help. I'm going to convince all the other Shvatim to accept your kingship. Yoav hears that Avner is in town. He has it against him again that he had killed his brother Asael. There were other considerations as well. To make a long story short, he killed Avner. As we learned back in the second Perek of Our Masechta on Daf Chof, David was extremely upset about it. He's concerned people are going to think that now he's gunning for everybody who was on Shaul's side. That's going to prevent the reconciliation of all the Shvatim. Avner himself was a tzaddik, etc. So we learned before that David broke protocol by going to the Levaya, even though normally a king doesn't, and he's doing his best to convince everybody that he had nothing to do with it. Now, he can't actually punish Yoav at that.
Who killed Avner?
Who
Who
killed
killed
Avner? So I'm
Avner?
saying Yoav did.
Yoav.
Yoav Asahel's brother killed Avner, saying that that saying that he that he deserved it, that he deserved it for having killed Asahel, Yoav's brother. So now again, David is extremely upset about it. He can't really do anything to Yoav. He says actually in the Psukim over there that Yoav is really too powerful for him. He's only just establishing himself as a king now. Yoav is the general. The whole Jewish people depend on him. So David says, I really don't have the ability to punish Yoav with what he deserves, but he curses Yoav with a bunch of curses, which we're going to discuss now in the Gemara. Okay. Years pass. David is now king over all the Shvatim. 30 or so years pass. Then comes Avshalom's revolt. Avshalom needs a general. He takes there's Amasa. Amasa is another nephew of David, which makes him a cousin of Yoav, and he become and then he's also a cousin of Avshalom. So Avshalom makes Amasa his general. Avshalom's revolt fails. Avshalom himself is killed, and that was actually against David's wishes because David specifically gave Yoav instructions before that final battle to make sure to not harm Avshalom. Yoav didn't listen; he killed Avshalom. So after everything's over, then David decides, you know what? I don't want Yoav as my general anymore. He's been too disobedient. Besides which, anyway, I want to reconcile with the other Shvatim. So he offers Amasa the job of chief general of the United Jewish Army. Shortly after that, another revolt breaks out. A fellow named Sheva ben Bichri announces, "Ein lanu chelek b'David, let's go revolt. We don't need David." So David tells Amasa, "You're the new general. Go gather together the army and go catch this Sheva ben Bichri." Amasa was late getting back with the soldiers, as we're going to learn in the Gemara. So David says to Yoav, "You know what? Listen, we got to get things taken care of as fast as possible. You go gather together the army and go chase after this Sheva ben Bichri." On the way, Yoav's with the army. He meets up with Amasa and tricks Amasa into thinking that he's buddy buddy with him. Gets him in within range and kills him. So Yoav remains the general of the army because at this point Amasa's dead. Now we have then we come to the beginning of so this is all various incidents throughout Sefer Shmuel. Now we come to Sefer Melachim. David is old and weak, and Adoniyahu, a son of David, thinks that he has a chance at the throne. He gathers together a bunch of supporters, one of them being Yoav, and tries to seize the crown for himself. Bathsheba and Nosson find out what's happening. We have this as the Haftarah of Parshas Chayesara. They go and tell David. David says, absolutely not. Shlomo has been promised the kingship, and he goes and immediately gives orders that Shlomo should be anointed as the new king.
Do we have it read this in Gemara, or was it the Mechamar that you had a few weeks ago? This
So
whole thing.
a few weeks ago we mentioned about in our Gemara about Avner. This part about Adoniyahu, no, we had earlier in our Masechta, we had about Adoniyahu, we had when David was old and weak, and therefore they needed Avishag HaShunamis to warm him up, and Adoniyahu figured he has a chance. Yeah, we discussed it back on Daf Chav Beis in our Masechta. Anyway, Adoniyahu's attempt fails. And Shlomo becomes the king. Before David passes away, he gives Shlomo instructions. It's in the Haftarah of Vayechi. He tells him there's unfinished business. One piece of unfinished business is that Yoav has to be dealt with. I wasn't able to punish him during my lifetime, but you need to deal with it. You need to punish him so he doesn't end up having to go to Gehenna. So then you ha then you finally have the part that we started learning yesterday, that Yoav runs to the Mizbeach and grabs a hold of the horns of it. And when David and when Shlomo sends Benayahu ben Yehoyada to execute him, then Yoav says then he tells him, come out of there. Yoav says, no, I'm not coming out of there. I'll die where I am. So now let's so now that we have that background, let's go and learn the Gemara and see some deeper aspects of some of these stories. So like this, the pasuk says, "Vayosh." When Benayahu comes to Yoav, who's holding on to the horns of the mizbeach, and he says to Yoav, "Come on out of there." And Yoav says, "No, I'm not coming out. Kipoy almost. I'll just die over here." So the pasuk says, "Vayosh Benayahu as a melech dover lamer." Benayahu responded back, went and reported back to the king, and he says, "Lamer." He says, "Koy dibur Yoav v'choya nani." This is what Yoav said, and this is what he answered me. So that implies that there's more than just what it says in the pasuk. To just say that Yoav said, I'm not coming out, I'm staying here, he doesn't have to report back to the king in the first place. In any case, what this koy dibur Yoav v'choyonani suggests that there was a whole back and forth over there. So what happened was, Amalei, so Yoav tells Benayahu, Zil Amalei, listen, go tell Shlomo, Tauti le tavid b'hai gavra. You can't do two things to that person, meaning to me. E kaklasle. So you have like this. I'm under a bunch of curses that your father David put on me after I killed Avner, says Yoav. So if you so if Shlomo wants to kill me, if he wants to kill me, Kabbalah Tuse Delati Avuch, then he should take on himself the curses that you're for that his that, so he's telling Shlomo through Ben Yahu, if you want to kill me, then first then you should take on yourself the curses that your father put on me. Meaning, in other words, basically, Maharsha explains, he's saying both things are unjust. David shouldn't have cursed me in the first place because I had a valid reason to kill Avner, as we're going to discuss in the Gemara. And now he's doing something else unjust by wanting to kill me now for that and for Amasa, which also I had justifications for that. So now if he wants to do that, then at least he has to take the curses on himself. Then fine, the Eloi. If not, Shavke, if not, then leave me alone. It's enough that I'm gonna have the curses that your father, that David, put on me. So that was the Koy Dibur Yoav V'Choyanoni. So now Bnei Yehu is not sure what to do. Yoav has a valid point. He shouldn't have the, there's no double jeopardy over here. So the pasuk continues. Vayomer lo hamelach. So Shlomo says to Bnei Yehu, "Asei kasha diber. Sure, do what he said. Ufgaboy and strike him. Ukvartoy, and then you'll bury him." In other words, Shlomo is saying, "Fine, I'm willing to accept the clawless on myself. Abi, we can. Abi, I can take care of my father's last wishes to deal with Yoav and not allow him a peaceful death." So in other words, the simple meaning is that David is saying, "I don't care if you have to kill him in the Azorah, in the Mishkan, then you do that." But now the Gemara is dashing that it means that David is saying, in addition, that he's saying that fine, if that's what it takes, that I have to take on the klolus in order to be able to do that, then fine, I'm willing to do that. And so the Gemara points out, Omer of Yehuda, Omer Rav. Sure enough, all the curses that David put on Yoav from killing Avner, all of them, indeed, since Shlomo took them on himself, all of them ended up coming true with one or another of David's and Shlomo's descendants. Namely, like this: David had cursed Yoav. Al yikores mi beis Yoav. He said there should never cease from the house of Yoav, Zov, umetzora. Machzik bapelach, Azov and Metzora, we know what those are. Machzik bapelach, a pelach is a spindle, is a large stick that's used for spinning. So people would sometimes use it as a makeshift crutch. So David is saying that one of the five curses is that Yoav's descendants will have to use crutches that they won't be able to walk properly. Another point, a pelech is usually used for spinning by women, and we'll talk about that soon, Bez Hashem, as well. Another possible meaning in that. The noifel bacherev, and falling by the sword, v'chasar lechem, and lacking bread. So those are the five curses that David put on Yoav, and now we're saying because Shlomo accepted them on himself as the price for having Yoav executed. Then, therefore, David and Shlomo's descendants, different ones, suffered from all five of these things. Zov me Rechavam. Where do we see there was a Zov? Is Rechavam, the son of Shlomo. Dichtiv, the pasuk describes how most of the Shvatim revolt against Rechavam, and they took Yerovam as their king. So the pasuk describes Vamelech Rechavam his amitz lalis b'merkava. The king Rechavam was trying very hard to get up onto his chariot, lonus Yerushalayim, to flee to Yerushalayim. It was in Shechem that there was the showdown between him and the other Shvatim, where everybody asked him, "Please go easy on us on taxes and the forced labor and all," compared to what Shlomo did. And Rechavam says, "No, I'm going to be even stronger and harsher on you than Shlomo was." So most of the Shvatim say, "Who needs this Rechavam?" And they revolted and made Yeravam their king instead. So Rechavam realizes he's in danger; he's in hostile territory. So the pasuk says he was trying very hard to get up on his chariot to run back to Yerushalayim. And why, with the point that it mentions Merkava, we have Gzeira Shava, the Uchtiv, the Cholam Merkava, Shiyukav, all of Azov Yitma. The Pasuk mentions any riding equipment on which a Zov rides, such as a saddle, becomes Tomei from a Zov, becomes Tomei Tumas Midras. So we see from that comparison, since the Pasuk makes a point that Rechavam was getting up on his Merkava, means that he was a Zov. Next, Metzora. Where do we find there was a Metzora in David's descendants? Me'uziyahu. We have the story of Uziyahu a couple hundred years later, one of the middle kings of Yehuda. Dichtiv, the pasuk describes Ochraskosai when he became very strong in his kingship. Gavach liboy ad lahashchis, his heart became proud until to a destructive degree. He thought of himself as great enough to be a koyin as well as a king. Vayimal b'Hashem alekov, so he betrayed Hashem by disobeying Hashem and going into the heichel. Vayovel heichel Hashem lahakter amizbach haktodas, he went into the heichel to bring ktodas. Well, he can't. He's a zor. He's not a koyin. And the pasuk says, "Vatzaras zorcha b'mitzchay, tzaras shone forth on his forehead." Now, obviously, he's getting tzaras because of what he himself did wrong. Other than that, up until that point, he had been a good king. He had been a tzaddik. But he made this terrible mistake. But nevertheless, the point is, if it hadn't been for David's curse, which now bounced back onto the family, then the Eibishter might have been more patient with him. He might have made that he doesn't get tzaras as soon. He might have gotten some lesser punishment. And the fact also, the Aruch HaNer also adds the fact that it says v'hatzaras implies, it could have said v'tzaras, v'hatzaras implies we mean the tzaras, which we know of from before, that came on him. So in other words, it was because of his Aveira, but after all, it might not have happened so fast and so seriously had it not been for the fact that Shlomo took these curses on the family. And that's also why the pasuk is stressing v'hatzaras, implying that the tzaras we know already from before. Okay, so that was the tzaras. Machzik bapelach, where do we see that a person was holding on to a staff, meaning that he couldn't walk properly? Me'osa. That we have the story of Osa, who was the third king after the kingdom split up. So he's the great grandson of Shlomo. Dichtiv, the pasuk describes he was also a king who was basically a tzaddik. Rakla es ziknose chola es raglav. When he got old, he had a disease in his feet. And what kind of disease? He was struck by podagra. In English, it's called gout, which is a disease that makes it very painful. It's tremendous foot pain, as the Gemara is going to go on to say now, and it makes it that he can't walk properly. So therefore, he'd have to be holding on to a pelech, to some kind of staff like that, in order to be able to walk properly. So the Gemara interjects, by the way, what is podagra? Amalei mazutra breder of Nachman lo Nachman hechi dami. What exactly is this disease of podagra? Amalei, he says, kemachat bebasar achai. It feels like a needle in living flesh. That's the kind of pain it is, a stabbing pain. So the Gemara asks, no yoda. How did Rav Nachman know that? And the answer is, one possibility is that Rav Nachman himself suffered from this disease, so he could describe it firsthand. Another possibility he learned from his Rebbe, that's what it feels like. Another possibility is, the Gemara uses this answer, sometimes Hashem gives his secrets to those who fear him. In other words, people, great Talmid Chachamim, who fear Hashem and work to learn Torah as much as possible, then Hashem tells them things that they otherwise couldn't have known, such as in this case, what podagra feels like. Rabbeinu Hanano, by the way, brings a different explanation of Mach. So there's the Machzik Bapelach, was also that he couldn't walk properly because of this foot disease. Rabbeinu Hanano brings a different explanation from the Yerushalmi. The word Pelach, again, it means a stick that's used for spinning thread, and it's something that typically women do. So instead, the Yerushalmi refers to that the Machzik Bapelach among David's descendants was Yoyosh. Yoyash was one of the kings of Yehuda. Famously, he's the one who the whole family was almost wiped out. He was the only baby that was saved. Anyway, to make a long story short, for a period of time during his rule, he was good. Yoyada Akoyin was teaching him, and he was good. After Yoyada passed away, Yoyash became a Rosha and an Ovid Avodah Zarah. He even allowed the nobles of Yehuda to worship him as an Avodah Zarah. So then the Pasuk describes that soldiers, that an army unit from Aram came and invaded Eretz Yisrael, and the Pasuk says they tortured Yoyash horribly, and the Yerushalmi says part of the torture was that they used him like men use women. So in that sense, the Machzik Bapelach is him, that he was abused in that way like a woman. Anyway, so that's another meaning of Machzik Bapelach. Next. Hashem's secret is to those who fear him, and he informs them of his covenant. So here, Hashem, so one possibility is that Rav Nachman knew what podagra feels like, what gout feels like, because Hashem revealed the secret to him. Next, the fourth one, Nofel Bacherev, where do we see that one of David's descendants fell and was killed by the sword, is Miyoshiyahu. We see from Yoshiyahu, one of the last kings of Yehuda, Dichtiv Vayoru Hamorim, or Hayorim, really, the Pasuk says, Lamelech Yoshiyahu. The Pasuk says that Yoshiyahu and his army went to fight against Pare Nechoi, and Pare's archers shot at Yoshiyahu, the Amar of Yehuda Amar Avsha, also called Gufe Kikvara. They made his whole body like a sieve. They stabbed him so many times that he was like full of holes all over his body. So we see, in other words, now Maharsha says he wasn't the only king of Yehuda who was killed, but he's the only one where we can see, based on the statement of Rabbi Yehuda Amar Rav, that specifically a sword was used to kill him. So in other words, first the archers shot him, but then they followed it up. They came, the Egyptian soldiers came over and were stabbing him with their swords. And the fifth one, Vachasau Lechem, where do we see that the curse of lacking bread came true among David's descendants? We have that Mi'chonia. We have from the Yechonia, who was the next to last king of Yehuda. He was taken prisoner by Nebuchadnezzar, and he was put in jail for many years in Babel. And the Pasuk says, Dichtiv Aruchos, Aruchos Tomid, Nitnolai. The Pasuk says that he was given a daily meal by Evel Meroidach. Evel Meroidach was Nebuchadnezzar's son and successor. So after Nebuchadnezzar died, after Yechonia by that point had been in jail for 37 years, then Evel Meroidach freed him from jail and honored him. And the Pasuk says that he gave him, and that he gave, that Pasuk says that Yechonia from then on was given a daily meal. Now, Rashi says that it was actually given by Nebuchadnezzar. Now, if you look in the Psukim, you find over there that it actually mentions that Evel Meroidach gave it to him. So there are actually different explanations. One possibility is that the Girsa in Rashi is incorrect, and instead of Nebuchadnezzar, it should say Evel Meroidach. And in fact, so there's a marginal note over here where that says that that's how it should be, and the Yad Ramah also says it. On the other hand, Maharsha says that no, what it means is that we see from the Pasuk that in Evel Meroidach's times he was being given food every day, implying that in Nebuchadnezzar's times, sometimes he was going hungry there in jail. Another possible explanation is that yes, he was getting from Nebuchadnezzar and from Evel Meroidach, and Evel Meroidach, though, what he did was he did something special. He had Yechonia dine with him at his table, but already he was getting from Nebuchadnezzar, but the point is, he didn't have his own. He had to be supplied with his food by somebody else, so that shows that he was chasar lochem, that he was lacking bread. So in short, all five of the curses that David had said on Yoav, again, because Shlomo was ready to accept them on himself as the price in order to kill Yoav, then therefore all of them came out on David's descendants. Amar of Yehuda Amar Rav, so Hainu da Amri Inshi, this is like the expression people say, Tehe Luta V'loi Tehe Lota. Better you should be one of the ones who's cursed rather than the one who curses. Because you see over here that David cursed Yoav, and eventually it wound up bouncing back on his descendants. So, in fact, Iyun Yaakov, on Ein Yaakov, points out, when you think about it, When you think about it, it was a little bit unjust for David to put these curses on Yoav. The very fact, we see that Shlomo was willing to accept them. Why didn't Shlomo say, you know what, there's no business, these curses, we should just be mevatel them altogether. So it shows that, in other words, there was a certain degree to which David and his descendants are guilty, and therefore by David putting this curse on Yoav, it ended up coming back on him and his descendants, and therefore, so we learn a lesson from that. In the future, don't be so quick to curse others.
Why was it? Why does he have to accept? He just the king should kill him. Who's asking him for what?
Well, that's the thing we were saying before, that Yoav had a valid point. He says, "Listen, your father already punished me for this killing of Avner by cursing me with these five curses. Now you want to also execute me? This is like double jeopardy. It's two punishments for the same thing." So he tells Benayahu to tell Shlomo, if you want to fulfill your father's instructions and kill me, then you have to accept these curses on yourself. And Shlomo agreed. If that's the price we have to pay in order to fulfill David's last wishes, then that's what we're going to do.
If the king David says do something, you do it without any yets and buts, and that's it.
Okay, nonetheless, Yoav had a valid point. No, nonetheless, Yoav had a valid point, and we see that Benayahu took it seriously enough to go and consult with Shlomo about it. There was an expression in a pasuk that says,
the fact that you know he went to consult with Shlomo, he was murdered by Malchus.
Who's murdered by Malchus? Benayahu? Benayahu was given instructions, but it doesn't mean that he killed. Yoav, well, that's what we're going to talk about in the whole sugya over here, what exactly Yoav was guilty of. Yeah, in the final analysis, he was a Mori B'Malchus, but the question was, is he being judged and executed for that, or for the fact that he killed Avner and Amasa all those years before, which is not necessarily Mori B'Malchus, that's a different factor. Yeah, I was going to say, there's a Loshen HaPosik that says, King Kilo Aschinam Loi Sova, a Posik in Mishlei that Shlomo himself wrote, that says that a vain klala loy sovay, and there's a kriyuk siv over there where it's written loy and print loy with an aleph and pronounced loy with a vav. So one meaning of it is that a curse for nothing will come to him, meaning ends up bouncing back on the person who did it. So in effect, that's what happened over here. Yoav is arguing, and there is some justification for that, that David had no business cursing him with these five curses, and now therefore he's saying that they wound up bouncing back on Shlomo. All right, so let's continue. So the Gemara says, Asiyu le Yoav. So now they brought Yoav to Beis Din. So we said before that he was holding on to the horns of the Mizbeach, meaning, in other words, as Tosfos had brought, as we learned yesterday, that it means that he wanted to be judged by Beis Din rather than by David, rather than by Shlomo. And again, according to the Chachamim, the benefit of that would be that then at least his property will go to his Yoshim rather than being confiscated by the government. And according to the Yehuda, that'll give him a little extra time. Anyway, so they brought him to Beis Din. They brought him to Beis Din for judgment. So they tell him, "My time k'taltil Avner. Why'd you kill Avner?" Omalei. So Yoav answers. So we have over here lay and whatever it goes. Abach changes it to Lahu because really we're speaking to the whole Sanhedrin. Anyway, so Yoav answers. Goyel Adam to Asoel Havoy. What do you mean? I was Asoel's Goyel Adam. Avner had killed Asoel, as we talked about before. So Asoel was my brother. So I'm his Goyel Adam. So they answered him. Asoel Roidif Hava. What do you mean? That Asoel was a Roidif who was chasing after Avner with intent to kill him. Omalei. So Yoav says, okay, but Hoyel Olatziloi Be'echad Meivorov. Fine. But the fact is, with a roidif, you don't have blanket permission to kill him. As we're going to learn later in the Masechta in detail, with a roidif, the first thing you have to do is try to save him from doing the Avera by wounding him in one of his limbs. So Avner should have done that. He should have. It's true, he's warning Asael back off. But then when Asael didn't back off, instead of outright killing him, Avner should have tried to disable him. Amalei, so the Rosh Beis Din says to Yoav, Lo Yochela, he wasn't able to. It wasn't a situation, as we're going to learn later in the Masechta. We're going to talk about the dinim of Roidif in detail at the end of the seventh parak. So we're going to say over there, if you're able to save the Roidif by wounding, by disabling him in one of his Eivorim, then you have to do that. If not, if the situation is such that you can't, then you're allowed to kill him. So the Rosh Beis Din is saying to Yoav, this was the situation. Avner wasn't able to do anything. Omalei, Yoav says, Hash to bedoifen chamishis kivenlei. Look at this. He was able to hit him so precisely in his fifth rib. And what's so dichtiv, as the pasuk says, Vayakeu Avner ba'achrei achanis elachomesh. Avner struck him with the back, with the hilt of his sword, at the Chomesh. And what is the Chomesh? For Amar Rabbi Yochanan, B'doifen Chamishes, it means the fifth rib, B'mokim Shemorav HaKavod Tluyin Boy, the place where the gallbladder and the liver are hanging. So in other words, it's a very sensitive spot, and a blow over there can kill a person. So Yoav says, look how exactly he hit him in that one vulnerable spot. You're telling me that Avner wouldn't have been able to kill my brother, wouldn't have been able to wound my brother Asoel in some other part of the body? So therefore, he killed him unjustly, and therefore I'm the Goyel Adam. Fine. The Rosh Beis Din says, fine. Nazel Avner, fine. Let's let go of the story of Avner. Fine. You have a valid argument to say that you killed him as the Goyel Adam. To be sure, Maharsha points out, the Pasuk does mention when David is giving his instructions to Shlomo, and when Shlomo says afterwards, when Benayahu tells him what Yoav has said, both times they mention the fact that he killed Avner and Amasa. So in other words, so they're not accepting the argument of the Beis Din, but fine, that's David and Shlomo hold that the Rosh Beis Din may accept this argument from Yoav, but nevertheless, David and Shlomo are not obligated to accept that, and they can still say that he's guilty of killing him. Another point Maharsha says is they may even hold la halacha that even if he's able to, uh, that that There is, in fact, an opinion that even where that even where he's able to save himself by wounding the person, he is allowed to kill him. So David and Shlomo may have held like that. So therefore, Avner would have had every right, according to that, to kill Asael, and therefore that Yoav is guilty of killing Avner for no purpose. In any case, the Beis Din is saying, fine, we'll let go of the claim about Avner. Let's go to the next charge. My time k'talte la'amosa. Why'd you kill Amosa? Omale, so Yoav says, Amosa mod b'malchus hava. Amosa had disobeyed the king, so he's chayiv misa. Dichtiv, as we talked about before, in connection with the revolt of Sheva ben Bichri, v'yomer ha'malach la'amosa hazak li'es ishuhud ha'shloshes yomim, v'goymer, the king says to Amosa, who again had just been appointed the new general, he says, gather together for me quickly the men of Yehuda and be here in 3 days. Vayelach Amosa lahazikas Yehuda. He went to summon together all the soldiers from Yehuda. Vayocher, but he was late getting back. He didn't make it back after the 3 days. Well, that makes him a murder b'malchus. Omalei, but the Rosh Beis Din says to Yoav, Amosa achen v'rakin darash. You have to realize Amosa wasn't just delayed because he got busy with something else. He did it correctly in that case because he was darshaning where it says ach and rak in the Torah. Ach and rak are miyotim. Whenever we have the word ach or the word rak, it means that we're excluding something from a general rule. Namely, the Beis Din tells Yoav, Ashkechinu, when Amosa went to gather together the soldiers, he found them to pasiach lahuba masechta, that they had just started learning a masechta of Gemara. Obviously, we don't mean the actual Gemara as we have it. This is long before even Mishnayos. This is 1,000 years before even Mishnayos were composed. What we mean, in other words, they were learning a topic in Torah. Omar, so Amosa thinks to himself like this. Where do we know that a murid b'malchus is chayiv misa? Ksiv, the posik says that by Yoshua, kol isha sheyamre espicha, anybody who disobeys you, v'lo yishma esvarecha, and who doesn't pay attention to your words, l'chol asher tetzavenu, anything that you command him, you must will be put to death. And a braisa says on that, yochol afilu l'divrei Torah, you would think that means that even if the king tells you to violate something in Torah, then you have to listen to him. Talmud Lomar, therefore the posik continues, rak chazak ve'emat. Only be strong and courageous. So the rak is a miut. If the king is telling you to violate something of Torah, then you don't listen to him. So in this case over here, in this case, they're starting to learn Torah. So therefore, we can't interrupt their learning, even for this important purpose of putting down Sheva ben Bichri's revolt. So the Beis Din argues and says that Amosa had a valid reason to delay in coming with the soldiers because otherwise it would have been violating the Torah to go and interrupt them in the middle of their learning. So they tell him, so Amosa was correct in what he did, and you were wrong to kill him and considering him a murdered b'malchus. Tosfos actually points out there was no hasra over there. So how are they bringing him up on charges of killing Amosa anyhow? But Tosfos answers that the Beis Din is going to go on to tell Yoav that on the contrary, you're a murdered b'malchus, so therefore don't be accusing Amosa of that and saying that you can, and saying that you could have killed him because he was a murdered b'malchus. On the contrary, he acted correctly, and you were the one who was wrong about it. Bichlal, though, over here, when we're saying that the Beis Din is first trying to try him on charges of murder, and then when they can't, then they're going to tell him that he's a murdered b'malchus. So an interesting point is, again, why Yoav, we understand why he wanted to be judged by the Beis Din, we said before, because of estate planning. Why did Shlomo go through this whole thing? Why was Shlomo willing to go through this whole thing? So the Margolius Hayam over here explains a very interesting thing. Bichlal, when we said before, we started the whole story by saying that Yoav at the end ran to the Mizbeach and was holding on to the corners. But the Rambam learns like this. When we say that the Mizbeach can save a person, not when he has to be judged by Beis Din. The only way the Mizbeach saves a person is if he's a Kohen who's doing the Avodah. Then temporarily, until he's finished the Avodah, then they can't take him off the Mizbeach. But the Rambam continues, when it comes to the king, when it comes to Din Malchus, or based in executing a person based on Haras Shah, then yes, the Mizbeach will protect him for the time being, even if he's not a Kohen. So now, so the Margolius Hayyan brings from Shuvas Ben Yehuda, he says, this is what's going on over here. He wanted the Beis Din to judge him, to say that he's guilty for killing Avner or Amasa, and that way, that will be a reason. Then in that case, he's being judged by Beis Din, then the exemption of that he's holding on to the Mizbeach won't work, so that way he'll be able to be removed from the Mizbeach. And now, once they removed him and they're judging him on these cases, so in the end, they found, we said, he's not guilty as far as Avner, but they're saying you there is reason to say that he was guilty as far as Amasa. But in any case, the point is though that fine, they may say he's at least guilty of killing B'shogeg, and now he has to go to the Ore Mikla. So now Yoav realizes he's stuck. Now Yoav is stuck. If he returns to the Mizbeach, then Shlomo is not going to be able to be killed as a murdered B'malchus, because fine, the Mizbeach can protect him from that, but still a Goyal Adam could get him, and Shlomo is a Goyal Adam. He's Amasa's cousin. So and if he says we should be brought to the Ir Miklat, then Shlomo could kill him over there as a Murid B'malchus. So Yoav decides that he's better off staying at the Mizbeach. And then again, as we said before, he says, at this point, if you want to kill me, then Yoav says only if you accept the curses on yourself. So there was all kinds of maneuvering over here. We're saying, but that's the reason why you had this court case in the first place. Why isn't Shlomo just outright send Benayahu to kill him? Is because of all these considerations. Because as long as one point is, again, because as long as he's holding on to the Mizbeach, then the king can't judge him as a Morib Malchus. Okay. So the Gemara continues. And so the Sanhedrin tells Yoav, Ela Ahu Gavra Murid B'Malchus Aver. You're accusing Amasa of having been a Murid B'Malchus. On the contrary, you're a Murid B'Malchus. Dichtiv, as the Pasuk says, Vashmur Ba Ad Yoav. Yoav heard about what was going on, how Shlomo had been appointed as king, and how just before that it describes how Adon Yohu had been executed for. We learned back on Daf Chof Beis that Adon Yohu had designs on the kingship still, and he was asking for Avishag as a wife, which is a Ridu Malchus, because she was David's exclusive possession, and Shlomo could marry her if he wanted, but Adon Yohu, as a commoner, could not. So now, and the Pasuk says, Vashmur Ba'ad Yoav. Yoav heard about what's going on, that Adon Yohu had been killed. Ki Yoav Nota Achre Adonia, and Yoav had inclined after Adonia. He was one of his supporters. The Achre Avshalom Loi Nota, but he hadn't back when Avshalom, a few years earlier, had rebelled against David, then Yoav had not followed Avshalom. So in other words, the point is that so now Yoav was a Murid B'Malchus. He had followed Adon Yohu and tried to make him king, which is a Murid B'Malchus against Shlomo. So the Sanhedrin says to Yoav, ultimately that even if we're going to say that you're potter because of Avner, and even if we're going to say that you can find an excuse about Avner and about Amasa, nevertheless the fact is that you're a Murid B'Malchus, and for that reason alone, you need to be executed. So the Gemara says, by the way, my loinota, why does the Pasuk have to mention that he didn't follow Avshalom? That's not a reason why he's Murid B'Malchus. On the contrary, that means that then he was loyal to David. So the answer is Amar Rav Yehuda shebikish lintes v'loinota. It means that even Avshalom, Yoav was considering following him, but in the end he didn't. So the Pasuk is saying, when it came to Avshalom, Yoav was thinking of following him, but he didn't. But now when it came to Adon Yohu, then Yoav figured then Yoav actually followed him and supported him. The Gemara says, my time aloy nota, taka, why didn't he follow Avshalom? And the answer is, Amar Abulazar, dain lichluchis shel David kayemes. Because David's strength was still there. Lichluchis literally means moisture. In other words, David still had a fair amount of his strength at the time. We actually see from the psukim in the story of in the story of Avshalom that David was still quite powerful then physically, and therefore Yoav was afraid to start up with him. But when it comes to Adon Yohu, already Yoav figured David is weak and he's lying in bed and he can't even get warm. So then he figures he has his opportunity. Rabbi Yossi Rabbi Chanina says another reason why Yoav didn't try to support Avshalom. Adain it's tagnini shal David kayomin. David's powerful people who are helping him out are still present. Apparently they weren't by the time of Adon Yohu a few years later, but in the times of Avshalom there were. Now Rashi points out the word it's tagnine, whatever literally means stargazers. So here we're not talking about stargazers, but what we mean is people when they hear a prediction from a stargazer, they tend to follow it pretty loyally, because they know that it's more likely to be true. So the same way, these were people that David would fight his battles using their advice and using their tactics and all. What do we mean? Da'amar of Yehuda Amar Rav, as we learned this over the year in the Masechta. Rabbi Yehuda had said, in the name of Rav, Arba Meis Yolodim Hayula the David. David had 400 young men in his army. That Kulan Vene Yifas Toya Hoyu. All of them were children of Yifas Toya that had been captured in various previous battles. Umagadli Bloidus Hoyu. They were wearing their hair long in a chuk, like Goyish style, so that way the Goyim will be afraid of them. At one point is, the Goyim will see to themselves, look at this. These boys were born from Yifas Toya, who were captured from various previous nations that David had defeated in battle and captured their women. That itself would psychologically have an effect on them and make them, well, why should we dare fight against David? We're going to end up in the same situation. They would go at the head of the army. They're the mighty men of David's army. So they didn't actually fight, but they were there as a psychological tactic against the enemies. So the point is, they were still around in Avshalom's times, and therefore Yoav realized that with such people in the army, David is much more likely to win, and therefore he should better back the winning side, which is David. Whereas by the time it came to Adoniyahu, Yoav was figuring that Adoniyahu has has a real shot at it. So, by the way, we talked about when we learned this previously in the Masechta about these 400 men. We learned it before on Daf Chaf Aleph. I mentioned over there an interesting word from a Reuven Margolius, that maybe the word is not 400, but rather the word should be Tisha, which is 9, where Tof would be an abbreviation for Tisha, because there's psukim in Sefer Shmuel and Divrei Yomim that mention nine children of David, besides for the well-known ones such as Shlomo, and then the vote would be, in other words, that these were these nine that we're referring to over here. So the Gemara points out, Upliga did up Abba Bakahana. Now, this that we just said, that David's victories in his wars were because of these were because of these 400 or 9, whatever, Bnei Yefois Toyar, that disagrees with Rab Abba Bar Kahana. Because Rab Abba Bar Kahana has a different understanding of what helped David win his wars. If it weren't for David sitting and learning Torah, Yoav wouldn't have been able to be successful in his wars. So his schus helped Yoav. V'yomole Yoav, like also David Batorah, and Yoav, if it weren't for him fighting battles, then David would not be able to sit and learn Torah peacefully. So in other words, there was an interdependent relationship over here. David's schus helped Yoav, and in turn, Yoav's ma'isim tovim, by fighting David's battles, helped David to have the safety and security to be able to learn Torah. Dichtiv, as the pasuk says, Vayhi David oisam mishpot tzedakah l'chol amoy. The pasuk says David was doing justice and righteousness for all his people. The Yoav ben Tzruya alat Sava, and Yoav ben Tzruya was in charge of the army. So ma tam David also mishpat tzedakah l'chol amoy. What made it possible for David to do mishpat tzedakah for all of his people? Mishum de Yoav alat Sava, is because Yoav is in charge of the army, and therefore David has the freedom to be able to do mishpat tzedakah. Now that we just said before, learning Torah, Marsha points out, these two things go together. He wouldn't be able to do mishpat or tzedakah if he wasn't learning Torah constantly and reviewing the dinim. The umatayim Yoav alat Sava, and how is it that Yoav is over the army and is able to be successful in his battles? Mishum de David oisem mishpat tzedakah l'cholamoy, because of the schus of David's learning Torah and is judging the people fairly. So according to that, then it wasn't these balei grupin who are making the difference as far as David being successful. It's rather the source of David's Torah. An interesting point, actually, when it comes to the korban ha'etzim, the offering of wood that they would bring to the Beis Hamikdash several times a year. There were different families that would bring on certain defined days during the time of the second Beis Hamikdash. There's a couple of families mentioned where the Gemara has machloikas whether the two of these families, one on the 20th of Av, one on the 20th of Elul, whether they were descended from David or from Yoav. There's a couple of sichas and chelik tes and in Tavshin Mem Zayin, and other times where the Rebbe Shteltzich on that, and explained it's not a machloikus b'metzius. What happened was, obviously, the families of David and Yoav intermarried with one another to begin with. After all, they were uncle and nephew, so their families were intertwined and intermarried. So the question is, and the point is, we're saying over here, David represents Torah, Yoav represents Gmilas Chasadim. The Gemara is also going to point out soon that Yoav was a great Baal Chesed. So therefore, so it's true, and so another, or rather putting it differently, Yoav's job is avodas habirurim. David's job is learning Torah. Yoav's job is avodas habirurim, to refine our world and make it a place for kedusha. And the Gemara is pointing out over here that these two things are interdependent. David's Torah depends on Yoav's avodas habirurim, and Yoav's avodas habirurim is enabled through David learning Torah. Okay. So that's the story of Yoav. So now we'll get back to Yoav in a little bit, but first let's talk about Avner. We said that Avner was killed by Yoav. What did he do that made him deserving to be killed like that? So you have like this. How did Yoav actually kill Avner? The pasuk says, "Vayetze Yoav meim David." Yoav left David. You have in the previous pesukim, he's telling David, "I don't think that Avner is coming to you with honest intentions. He's still on Ishbosheth's side. He's just coming as a spy." So the pasuk says, "Vayetze Yoav meim David." Yoav left David's presence. "Vayishlach malachim achrei Avner." He sent messengers to go and call Avner. "Vayashivu oisim mibur hasira," and they brought him back from Bur Hasira, and they brought him back to Hebron, and that's where Yoav killed him. So the Gemara says, "My Bur Hasira." Now, in the simple sense, you'd say Bur Hasira is the name of a place. But then, why is it important for us to know that Avner was there? So the answer is, "Omer of Abba Bakahana Bur Vesira Gormulay LaAvner Sheyahoreg." A bur, which means a pit of water, and a sira, a thorn, are the things that caused Avner to be killed by Yoav. What happened? Back in Shmuel Aleph, during the time when David is running away from Shaul, there's one time when Shaul is in a cave and David is further back in the cave, and he actually has an opportunity then to kill Shaul unawares, but instead he cuts off a corner of Shaul's clothing. And afterwards, when Shaul leaves the cave, then David calls out to him and he says, "Listen, you have people all the time who are convincing you that I'm a danger to you and I'm looking to kill you, but you see how close I was to you. Here, I have this piece of cloth from your garment and you can see how close I was and I didn't kill you, so please leave me alone." So what happens? Avner comes in, and Avner says to Shaul, "It doesn't mean anything. It means that you ripped your clothing on some thorns in the cave over there, and then David found that piece of cloth, and he's claiming that he was within striking range of you. So that's the sira, that's the thorn." Then you have a couple of prokim later, also in Shmuel Aleph, again during the time when David is still on the run from Shaul. At one point, Shaul has his whole army with him. It's at nighttime; they're asleep. David and his men sneak into the camp. Again, David's men are telling him, "You have an opportunity now to kill Shaul." David says, "Absolutely not." But he takes the jug of water and the spear that Shaul had by his head. And this way, again, then he calls out and he tells them, "Listen, again, you see how close I was. I have your water jug and I have your spear. Look how easily I could have killed you, but you see I didn't. I'm not trying to kill you. Please stop chasing after me." Again, Avner says, "Who says that David actually took it from near your head?" He says that he tells him that he found it someplace. A pit of water represents over here. That represents this jug of water. So he's saying, in other words, he found it somewhere. He found it somewhere, and therefore he's claiming that he took it from near your head. He was nowhere nearby. So again, both times Avner is talking Shaul and just saying, "Don't think that David is such a tzaddik as he's making himself out to be. He's pretending that he found that he was able to get so close to you." Maushah says calling a jug of water a burr is a little bit of a doichet. Rather, it would be that Avner is claiming you left it by a pit when you were going to fill up water in the jug, and then you left it there by mistake and David found it. So now, as a result of that, prevented David and Shaul from reconciling, is now why the Eibishter brought him this punishment that he was killed. So those two things, Gormel la Avner, Sheyahoreg, those two things caused Avner to be killed by Yoav. So how did Yoav kill him? The pasuk says, "Vayatehu Yoav al teich hashar." Yoav brought him into the gate, "Ladaber ite basheli," to talk with him basheli. Now, in the simple meaning, basheli means unawares. Avner was unaware that Yoav was trying to kill him. But that means, first of all, what is Shar? Amar Rabbi Yochanan Shadonai Din Sanhedrin. The gate we always find throughout Tanakh is the place where the Sanhedrin would sit. So it means that Yoav is bringing Avner to Beis Din actually to have him judged for killing Asoel. Omale, namely Yoav, starts the accusation by saying, "My time of Kataltel Asoel, why did you kill my brother Asoel? And I should be the Goyal Adam for that." Omale, he answers, "Asoel roida for you." So he says, like we said before, Asoel was a roida who was chasing after me to kill me. So Yoav says, "Hoya l'chol atzila be'echad me'evodav, you should have saved him by wounding him in one of his limbs." And Avner says, "Lo yechilile, I couldn't. The situation didn't allow it." And Yoav says, like we said before, "Hash to b'dayfin chamishis kavnasle, you were able to hit him exactly in the fifth rib. Be'echad me'evodav lo yechaltale, you weren't able to wound him in one of his evodim." So it's not stam that Yoav is just saying unilaterally, is just deciding unilaterally that Avner is guilty. He held that he actually had a valid reason in Beis Din to be able to kill him as a Goyal Adam, arguing that you didn't kill that you didn't have a right to kill my brother as a Roidif, and you should have instead wounded him. Incidentally, by the way, Chevron it mentions in Sefer Yeshua was an Ir Miklat. So how is Yoav killing Avner there in the first place? So one thing is, when it's Shoigig Korav L'Mezid, when it's very near the Amezid, then the Ir Miklat doesn't protect the Goyal Adam. So Avner either didn't know that din, or he figured he was a true Shoigig, whereas Yoav held that not, and that's why Yoav was able to take advantage of that. So the pasuk says L'daber Ite Basheli. It says that Yoav brought Avner over there to speak with him Basheli. So again, the simple meaning of Basheli means unaware. It means that means that Avner was unaware that Yoav was trying to kill him, or unaware that the Ir Miklat wouldn't save him. But the Gemara Darshins, Amar of Yehuda Amar Rav, al iske sholu. It means that he was talking with him about matters involving taking off a shoe. Sholu miloshit shalna olecha ma'araglecha, take off your shoes. Namely, that he asked him. The Gemara elsewhere mentions that Yoav pretends to ask Avner a shaila in halacha. If a woman a yavama has to do chalitza, and she doesn't have hands, her hands have been amputated, how can she do chalitza? So Avner says she can do it with her teeth. She can undo the straps with her teeth. So Yoav says, "Show me." And when Avner bent down to show him how it would be done, then Yoav killed him. The pasuk says, "Vayakeu shama lachoymesh." He hit him at the choymesh. So why the choymesh? Again, like we said before, Amar Rabbi Yochanan, "Bedoifen chamishis" means the fifth rib, makom shemarav a covered tluyin bo, in the place where the gallbladder and the liver hang. So it's a very sensitive area. Going back now to when Shlomo gave instructions to Benayahu to kill Yoav. So again, we said Yoav had run away and was holding on to the corners of the Mizbeach, and he says, "I don't want to come out of here," and Benayahu has to go to consult with Shlomo to see about what to do. And Shlomo says, "Yes, go ahead and kill him." And he says, Shlomo gives a whole speech over there over a couple of psukim, and he says, "V'heishiv Hashem es domay al roshay." Hashem will return, will bring back the guilt of the blood on his own head, meaning he'll be responsible for his own death because what he did wrong. Ashapoga b'shnei anoshim tzadikim v'toyv mimenu, because he killed two people who were greater tzadikim and who were better than him. So the two people are Masa and Avner. Why is Shlomo calling them tzadikim v'toyv mimenu? Toivim, they were better than him in the sense, show you Darshan Ach and Radakin, because as we said before, that they were Darshaning, where it says Ach and Rak in the Torah, that we know you don't listen to the king, where it would involve being over on Divrei Torah, Vuhulei Darash, whereas Yoav didn't know that Darasha. So we find, by Amasa, we said before, the soldiers were learning Torah, and he didn't want to interrupt them. By Avner, we find, we mentioned this earlier in the Masechta, when Shaul gives instructions to kill the Kohanim of Noiv, Avner refuses for the same reason. He knows that when the king is giving an order that's illegal, apitoda, then you don't listen to him. So Avner did right in that by not to. So Avner and Amasa both showed themselves to be, both acted correctly over there, disobeying an illegal order from the king. On the other hand, Yoav did not. When David gives instructions to Yoav to see to it that Uriah, Bathsheba's husband, or former husband, whatever, is placed in a vulnerable position in the battle in order that he'll be killed, and then David will be free to marry Bathsheba, Yoav should have disobeyed the instruction. That's Uriah is not Chayiv Misa. And yet Yoav did not, and he followed David's instructions. So therefore, so we see that they were tovim in that they darshan this din and knew what to do, and Yoav did not. Why are they called tzaddikim? Why are they called greater tzaddikim than him? Shehein bepev v'lo osu, because they only heard the king verbally saying it, and they still didn't do it. They heard the king telling them in face to face, do this, and they still disobeyed. Yet Yoav, he wasn't told face to face by David to do this to Uriah. He received a letter from David. It would have been so easy for him to say, it's only a letter, why should I listen to it, especially since it's against Torah? And he didn't, and followed David's instructions. So therefore, relative to him, they are tovim and they are tzaddikim. Okay, another detail. So we discussed just now how Yoav tricked Avner and killed him. What about Amasa? How did he do that? The pasuk says, "V'Amasa le'nishma b'cherev asher b'yad Yoav." When Yoav and Amasa met up during the revolt of Sheva ben Bichri, and Yoav killed Amasa, the pasuk says that Amasa was not careful regarding the sword that Yoav had in his hand. Omarav shalechoshtoi. What it means is not that he didn't see the sword or something. He saw it. He didn't suspect that Yoav would have any intention to kill him. And the point was, he figured that there was shalom between them. He figured that they were all at peace. Yes, previously we were on opposite sides because you, Yoav, were David's general and I was Avshalom's general, but that's all past us now. So Amasa had no reason to think that Yoav has it out for him, and therefore, even though he sees Yoav with a sword on his waist, he didn't suspect anything. Okay. Now, after we talked about all these, we had quite a bit of negative things about Yoav over here, let's talk about something positive about him. The pasuk says, after he was executed, vayikover beveseh bamidbar. It says he was buried in his house in the desert. Now, one point that means is, in other words, that he did actually get his wishes that if he was executed by Beis Din, as we learned before, then he should have been buried in the kvarim that they have, the temporary kvarim that they have for the Niskolan and Nisrafan and so forth, as we learned earlier in the Perek. So here we see that he actually got his way and he was buried together with his ancestors. But why does the pasuk say that he was buried in his house in the Midbar? Otu Beisid Midbar, who? Is Yoav's house a desert? Bechlal, that as the general, he would be living in Yerushalayim. But in any case, he's certainly not living in the desert. Amar of Yehuda, Amar Rav, Kam Midbar, means that Yoav's house was like a desert. Ma midbar mufka lakol, just like a desert is hefker for everyone. Af beisish or Yoav mufka lakol, the same way Yoav's house is hefker for everybody. Any aniyim can come, and they're always going to find food and lodging and everything in Yoav's house. But poor people can always come and get parnasa from his house. So he was a big baal tzedakah. Dover achar, another meaning. Kamidbar, there's another way in which Yoav's house is like a midbar. Ma midbar menukah migezel v'arayas, just like a desert is free of gezel and arayas, because those kinds of things you only find in big cities. You don't really have, there's not enough people in a midbar for there to be such averas. The same way Yoav's house was free of such things as well. The chiddush being, in other words, that Marsha points out that usually soldiers are not like that. Soldiers, and Yoav was a general for most of his career, so usually they are guilty of gezel and they are guilty of arayas. So, Yoav's house was clean of that. Ben Yehoyada adds, even though Yoav most of the time wasn't home, nevertheless, he still kept a tight ship over there at home and made sure there's no gezel on Arias. Okay, another drasha in favor of Yoav. The pasuk describes how after they conquered the city of Yerushalayim, so it says that David was rebuilding part of the city, and then it says, V'yoyav yechaya es sha'arayir. Yoav was Yechaya, the rest of the city. Now, in the simple meaning, Yechaya means that he was reviving. Yechaya means reviving. So, in the simple sense, it means he was rebuilding the rest of the city. But the Gemara Darshins, Omer of Yehuda, Afilu Munini v'tzachanosa, even fish and brine for the fish, which are like the kind of fancy foods, the kind of finicky foods that people would eat. Toyim poris lahu. So even whenever Yoav was tasting any of them, he would send some portions of it to the people of the city. So Yechaya, he was enlivening them by giving them even these delicacies that he himself would eat, small fish and the juice with them, which are delicacies. He would make sure that he didn't just keep it for himself, he would make sure that the aniyim of the city get some as well. Marsha points out, since it says sha'or ha'ir, the word sha'or suggests even the things that are tofel, even the things that are shirayim, he would still make sure that the aniyim of the city were given some of it. So therefore, so that's another point in praise of Yoav, that he was a big baal tzedakah and a big baal chesed. Hadron aloch nigmar adin. Mishnah says, Arba misses nimsir lebeistin. Altogether, there are four types of misses that are given to beistin. Skila strefa herig v'chenek. Reb Shimon Omer. Reb Shimon says you have to flip around the order. Strefa, skila, chenek v'herig. Reb Shimon puts strefa ahead of skila and chenek ahead of herig. The nafkamina of it is, as we're going to learn later in the Masechta, if a person is chai of two types of misses beistin, which one do we give him? So we give him the harsher one. So the question is, which one is the harsher one? So Reb Shimon holds that strefa is harsher than skila and chenek more than herig, as we'll learn in the Gemara tomorrow why that is, Be'ez Hashem. So the Mishnah continues, Zu mitzvah saniskolin. This that we learned in the previous perek is the mitzvah of how people are given skila. The other three mitzvahs based in we're going to discuss in this perek. So the Gemara starts off, Omar Rava, Omar Rav Schoira, Omar Rav Huna, Kol Mokam Shoshanu Chachamim Derech Minyan. Whenever the Chachamim give a number of something in a Mishnah, and they say there are this number of things, and here's the list. Ein muktam u'ocher. They're not necessarily meant to be in any particular order. We're not always putting out. Now, obviously, you have mishnayos that are listing the order in which things are done. You have, for example, let's say the order of brachas in Shemana Esrei, the order of tkiyas, things like that. But here, what we're saying is that when the Mishnah just gives us a list, it's not necessarily meant to be in any significant order. Chutz mishiva sammonin, with the exception of the seven chemicals. Ditnan, we learn in a Mishnah. Now, if you have so like this, you have a piece of clothing that has a stain on it. You need to know whether that stain is blood, in which case it might be damnida. So you have this was a piece of clothing, let's say that a woman wore. You don't know whether the stain on it is blood, which would mean that she's a nida, or whether it's some other kind of, or whether it's a dye or something. So the Mishnah says shiva sammonin ma'avirin al kesem. So they would use seven chemicals, seven reagents to put on the stain to see if it makes the stain go away. The first one is roik tofel, is empty saliva. The Gemara in Nida explains all the details. Roik tofel means basically the saliva when a person first wakes up in the morning before they've spoken or anything, then that saliva is especially strong. Tofel actually means tasteless, so like tasteless saliva. The second one is the juice or the soup from split beans. Urine. Each of these things, again, in Nida goes into more detail. Here we're just listing them briefly. The neser, the fourth one is neser, which is a chemical. It's a mineral. That's a mineral that contains sodium. They find that it's mined in Egypt and in other places. The next one is a boris, is a certain kind of herb. Kamulia is another kind of herb. The eshlach or the eshlag and something that you get from oyster shells. So all of those things, so you have to do one after the other for katani sefer. So now this Mishnah continues, Haviron Shaloi Kasidron, that if you put them on the stain out of order, Oshe Haviron Shvatan Ke'echad, or you put them all seven at once, Loi Osav Loi Klum, then it doesn't count for anything. And even if the stain stays, it doesn't show that it's dye, it might well be blood. But in order for it to be blood, it would have to be that you put these reagents on it in this order, and only then if it goes away does it mean that's blood. So therefore, so we see that even though the Mishnah is giving a list over there and not specifically saying this is the order, nevertheless that is the order. Now Rashi had said, again, the question is, we want to use that to see whether in fact it is blood or not, and if not, then we know it's dye. Tosfos points out that even if we know that damnida, if it lasts through all of these seven reagents, then we would still say that it's bottle. So therefore, it still wouldn't be matame, the clothing. In any case, the point is that there we have an example where even though the Mishnah just gives a list, it's actually meant to be a list in order. So the Gemara says, "Rav Papa Sava Om Mishmei the Rav Om Af Arba Misses." Here is another one: the four misses of our Mishnah. Midikom Maflik Rav Shimon. Since we see that Rav Shimon is arguing and saying the order is different, so Shmamina Davka Katani. Obviously, that means that the Tana of our Mishnah, the Tana Kama, is saying them in a specific order. When he's listing them, he's not listing them in a random order. He holds that Skila goes ahead of Sreifa and Herod goes ahead of Chenek, and Rav Shimon is disagreeing. So the Gemara says v'idach. So why doesn't Rava, in the name of Rav Schora, in the name of Rav Huna, add that to his list as well? He says, but plug the lekamai would be fine because we're not talking about cases where there's machloikas in the Mishnah. It's true there can be more than one case, but a case where all the Tanoim hold that a list is meant to be in order, you find that only by the Shiva Sammanim. The Gemara continues, Rav Papa Omar Af Seder Yuma. Rav Papa says, here's another one, the order of the Avodas in Masechta Yuma, where it talks about the order of the Avodas on Yom Kippur, Ditnan, and we learn in a mission over there, Kol Maisa Yom HaKippurim HaMurim Ala Seder. All of these details of the Avodah of Yom Kippur that are given in order over there, Im Hikdim Maisa L'Chaver, if he did one thing before the other, if he did them out of order, like also like Klum, then what he did doesn't count for anything because they have to be done in the exact order that it says. So v'idach, why doesn't Rava count that as well? Because it's Ahu Chumra Ba'alma, because that's not really the reason why for the Seder, not because one of them is more important than the other, but just because the day of Yom Kippur is so important that the Torah wants you to do things in a certain order. So in other words, not like when we said about the seven Sammanim, the reason is because each one has a greater effect than the other one, and therefore they have to be done in a certain order. And the Dalet Mis is based in also each one is harsher than with Maisa Yom Kippurim. It's not, for example, let's say you have, for example, he has to shecht his par. Then he goes and takes the handfuls of tortoise and so on. It's not that let's say taking the handful of the tortoise is more or less important than shechting the pyre, but just that's the tortoise because Yom Kippur is such a serious thing. Therefore, the tortoise insists on a certain order of it. So therefore, so Rava is not listing it because the reason for the order there is based on a different kind of consideration. The Gemara continues. So the Gemara continues. Rav Huna Breid Rav Shoma Af Seder Tomid. Here's another one where the order is significant. Here's another one where the order is significant is that when it comes to the Seder Atomid, which is described in Masechta Tomid, Dekatoni Allah, and the Mishnah says Zeru Seder Tomid. This is the order of the Tomid. So we see that what the Mishnah is listing over there, it's not Stam, a random collection of things. They're actually done in this order. The Idach, what does Rava answer to that? He says, Ahula mitzvah ba'alma. That means the mitzvah, ideally you should do it that way, but it doesn't mean that that if you did it in a different order, then you actually wouldn't be Yotze. As opposed to with the seven Sammanim, you do it out of order, then you're not Yotze. And the same way, the Seder Yom Kippurim, if you did it out of order, you're not Yotze. But here, by the Seder Talmud, it's just this is the proper way to do it, but nevertheless, you could do it in a different order. So the Gemara says now, so what is Rava's point then? If we're going through these various cases where we have a list like that, and Rava is saying that you should know it's not meant to be an absolute order like that, so La Puki, so what is it? What is Rava coming to exclude then? So La Puki mitzvah chalitza. He comes to exclude the mitzvah of chalitza. The Tanan, we learn in Yevamos, mitzvah chalitza, the proper way of doing chalitza is... and by the way, here's where Tosfos wonders, why didn't we add also the order of the brachas on Rosh Hashanah and the order of the tekiyas? So as we were saying before, there is the one answer about that is that one answer is, in fact, where the Mishnah is explicitly saying Seder Brachas, then yeah, obviously it means in that order. But when the Mishnah doesn't say the word Seder necessarily, then nevertheless, generally there's no Seder with the exception of these things. So va'apuki mitzvahs chalitza. So as opposed to chalitza, the tan mitzvahs chalitza, bahu v'yavimti lifnei beistin, the proper order of chalitza is that the yavam and the yavama come to beistin, ho'yunosin la'etza ha'igenes loy, the first thing is they give him the appropriate advice to do yibum chalitza, Meaning sometimes we might tell them, for example, if you're significantly different in age, then don't do Yibum, just do Chalitza. So they give them the advice that's appropriate to the situation. The pasuk says that the zkenim of a city should call for him and they should speak to him. So they give him the, so they discuss with him and they advise him. Then she says that my yavam refuses to do yibum with me. He says, I don't want to take her as a wife. Over Loshan HaKodesh O'Omim, these words, Me and Yavami and Lechafatzi Lekach, have to be said in Loshan HaKodesh. The Gemara there learns it from Sukkim. The next thing that happens is the Yavama comes in front of him in the presence of the Skenim. She takes off his shoe, the yoke of a fauna, and she spits towards his face, which means she spits in his presence on the ground. It has to be that the Dayonim see the saliva coming out of her mouth. And then she speaks up and says, this is what should be done to a man who doesn't want to build up his brother's household. And they're called in Yisrael based Chalutz HaNoal, which means that everybody says Chalutz HaNoal three times. So that's the order the Mishnah says. Now Rav Yehuda says, mitzvah chalitza, the proper way to do the mitzvah of chalitza, she says the words, mei and yivami, v'koire, and he says, lechafatzi, chiletzes, she takes off the shoe, v'rekekes, she spits, v'koire, and she says, kocha yo'osalish. Now in Yevamis, we ask, my kamash malon, what's Rav Yehuda's chiddush? Masnissin, he's just repeating what it says in the Mishnah. And the answer is, hokamash malon, mitzvah hochi. Rav Yehuda wants you to know, the proper way of doing the mitzvah is like that. The e apich, but if he flipped it around, if they did it in a different order, less fun bother, there's no problem in it. Tani nami hochi, and in fact, we learn in a Mishnah like that, bein shehiktim chalitza l'rekika, whether you put chalitza before the spitting, or rekika l'chalitza, or whether she spat before she did the chalitza, masha asa asui, then what's done is done. So the point is, even though the Mishnah is giving over there a list, Rava wants you to know it doesn't have to be in that order, it could be out of order. That's what Rava meant by saying that every place where the Chachamim give a list, then it's not meant to be in a specific order, with the exception of the Shiva Sammanin and various other Amiroyim mention other exceptions, but over there by chalitza, it's not so. And another one, here's another example, Ula Puki Mehoditnan. Here's another one where we have an exception where even though the Mishnah gives a list, it's not meant to be in a particular order. Kohen Gadol Meshamesh B'Shmoina Kelim, the Mishnah in Yuma says, a Kohen Gadol does the Avodah wearing eight clothing, the Hedyot Barba, a Kohen Hedyot wears four, the four for a Kohen Hedyot are B'Ksoines, B'Mechasayim, B'Mitznefes V'Avnet, the long shirt, the pants, the turban and the belt, most of all, and Kohen Gadol, the Kohen Gadol, in addition, also has Choshen V'Ephod U'Me'il V'Tzitz. Now that's the order. So you would think that it sounds like he puts on the Ksonis first, because the Ksonis is listed first. But V'Tanya, in fact, we learn in a Braisa, Minayin Shalo Yehei Java Kodim L'Mechnasayim. How do we know that nothing else is put on before the Mechnasayim? Shenemo, Mechnasei Vad, Yiyu Abasore. The Pasuk says, Mechnasayim of linen should be on his flesh, which implies that they're the first thing that goes on his flesh before anything else. So therefore, so we see that even though the Ksonis is listed first, in fact, they're not put on first, the Mechnasayim is. So for Tana, my time after me, Ksonis, why does the Tana put the Ksonis first? So the reason is Mishum to after me, Kro. The reason is because the Pasuk mentions it first. When it mentions the Kohen getting dressed to do the Avodah, when it says by the Kohen Gadol, So it mentions the Ksonis. Ksonis vads kodesh yubash u'michnasei vad yu al-basarai. So therefore it mentions the Ksonis first. And ukro my time akdame. In turn, why does the Pasuk put it first? Mishum de machasi kula gufa adifalei, because the Pasuk would rather mention the first thing that covers his entire body. The michnasayim only cover him from his waist to his knees. So therefore better let's mention the Ksonis first, which covers his whole body. And then we'll go to talk about the michnasayim. But in fact, the michnasayim are put on first. So there's again an example where a Mishnah gives a list and nevertheless we do it out of order of what it says in the Mishnah.
Yes, Shikayach.
Shikayach, everyone.